Unexplored Territory podcast. This week we talk to Pete Keeler about what's new in vSAN 8 update 2. Welcome back to the show, Pete.
Yeah, thanks for having me back, guys. I swear I was looking at the calendar and I realized that it had been 6 months ago, but it really hasn't felt like that because it feels like I was just on the show here.
Yeah, you have the honor to be the guest that appeared four times on this show. So, congratulations.
No, thanks very much. But actually, I think we got to give credit to the VMware vSAN release cycle. So that being every 6 months, I think we're, you know, right in line with that.
Yeah, and speaking of the release, every time when you come onto the show, we say this release is huge. It feels like this ad, but it's not, right? It's really cool. But before we dive into the announcement, what we have for vSAN 8 update 2, which we're going to release or announce at Explore, I should say announce, we want to cover a previous announcement first, and that was the support for read-intensive devices with ESA. Can you explain to us what it means and why is that important?
Yeah, sure thing. So this was sort of a unique announcement for us in that this was out of our normal release cycle, and it's actually applicable to vSAN 8 Update 1, which was announced back in March, I believe, of 2023. So what this is that some may or may not be aware that NAND flash devices have a very finite life, meaning that they wear out over time. The NAND cells, they can only be written and erased so many times or reprogrammed so many times. Now, with enterprise storage solutions, that's a bit of a challenge because their main goal is to be able to store data and store it really reliably. So in a way to help accommodate for this, we've many of the drive manufacturers will help try to convey how long their storage devices will last. And they do this through sort of a measurement of drive writes per day. And up until this point, we had supported a storage device that had a drive writes per day of 3, meaning that was sort of moderate in the range of endurance for storage devices. Well, with the announcement here just about a week ago, we have started to certify storage devices that have drive writes per day of just 1, meaning that they're much lower endurance, 1/3 the endurance of the previous drives. And so that's really going to do two things for our customers. It's going to lower the cost, essentially, for all of these ready nodes. And it's also going to give them the opportunity to even introduce higher capacity storage devices. A lot of the lower endurance storage devices may be spec'd a little bit larger in size since they're not sort of pre-allocating a lot of the NAND flash cells in a way for the purpose of endurance. And they can actually use it for storage capacity.
So that sounds really great, all these positive benefits of this new feature, but you triggered me on two points. You said finite life and you said lower endurance. Now, with some customers not knowing exactly how many writes per day they're actually doing, can you translate that into a more sensible meaning? What I mean by that is, will it be a problem for customers?
Yeah, so we know that, with any sort of a design choice, there's always a series of trade-offs. Now, when we think about endurance of a storage device, even back in the spinning media days, there were expected lifetimes of these storage devices. So NAND flash is really no different in that regard. But when we think about the endurance, first of all, that measurement itself of drive writes per day, sometimes that can be a little misleading because someone might think, wait, I can only write 3 times on my storage device for a given day? No, that is looking at every single NAND flash cell being overwritten 3 times per day. And that's a massive amount of writes that would be occurring. But what we've done, though, with this to help account for the possibility that a single drive write per day storage device may not be sufficient enough in their environment is that in vSAN 8 Update 2, we've introduced a new health finding, which will be pulling the smart data from the NVMe-based storage devices so that we can look at the endurance rate at which these storage devices are being written, and we can issue an alarm or a health finding alert when it meets a certain threshold. So that being like 90%. So this is a great way to be able to gain some confidence in the lower endurance storage devices. Now, the thing for many to really remember, though, is that if you have environments that are really resource intensive, workloads that are really demanding a lot, that's going to be really a better fit for these mixed use storage devices that are rated at 3 drive writes per day. And the best way to really know is to simply run through the vSAN Ready Node Sizer. That's going to help our customers sort of sort out the differences of what storage devices should they be using in their Ready Nodes.
I think it's always a good thing to start with that sizer before you actually endeavor with the vSAN adventure, right?
Yeah, there's so much intelligence that has been built into that. You know, I think when vSAN first started out, it was the land of spreadsheets as far as some of the calculations that were done for capacity and things of that nature. But with the amount of effort that has been put in to that tool, it's really a great starting point for anybody that wants to really build out their cluster at the right level for their environment.
Cool. And so we also introduced a new Ready Node type, which is called ESA AF0, and I assume AF stands for All Flash. Can you explain what this new type is, the requirements and the limitations of that, and in particular, what use case it has?
Yeah, this was another announcement that we sort of did right in line with the support of the read intensive storage devices. And pretty much almost everyone that I've spoken to has been really excited about this. So for many that may not be necessarily familiar with the vSAN Ready Node program for the Express Storage Architecture, or ESA, is that we had 5 classifications. I think it was 5, if I can count correctly. 5 classifications that defined the Ready Nodes based off of, you know, various hardware specifications. And essentially, the higher the number, the higher performance, higher capacity, and so forth. Well, one of the things, though, is that on the low end of the spectrum, the ESA-AF2, that was our sort of our entry-level Ready Node profile. Well, one of the challenges there was that the barrier for entry was a bit high for some of our customers. We built this Express Storage architecture in a way that we could really exploit the capabilities of these NVMe storage devices. But in many environments, they maybe didn't necessarily need all of the performance potential, but they wanted to take advantage of some of the efficiencies of ESA. And so that put them in a bit of a predicament. So we've introduced the new AF0 Ready Node profile, which has much lower hardware requirements. So when we think about the minimum hardware requirements now for an AF0, as opposed to 32 cores, which was the previous minimum, now we just need 16. When we think about RAM, the old minimum was 512 gig per host. Now it's just 128. And then maybe most importantly is the networking requirement was 25 gig, and now it's 10 gig. So it's really geared, these AF0 Ready Nodes are really geared for that smaller data center, edge environments, things of that sort that will be able to take advantage of the ESA, but may not necessarily have, you know, extremely resource intensive workloads. Now, I would still recommend, by the way, for those AF0 ready nodes, make sure you spec 25 gig NICs in those just in advance. That's sort of going to future-proof your arrangement without adding all that much cost. But they certainly can still run it 10 gig if you have some switchgear that's at that.
Yeah, and I also always love to hear those new use cases. And speaking of use cases, I believe we have one for vSAN file services with ESA, but also for VCF. Can you talk us through those two?
Yeah, this was another one that would oftentimes come up with our larger customers where they were running VCF in their environment, but they were equally as interested with vSAN ESA, and they would ask for support. And up until vSAN 8 update 2, we weren't able to offer the ESA to power VCF. So VCF 5.1, which is paired with vSAN 8 update 2, is going to be able to run the ESA. And that's really ideal for many of these customers who you know, have larger, more sophisticated environments. They're going to be able to consolidate some of those resources even more than they have in the past. And it's simply going to offer them a lot of flexibility. It can run, the ESA can run in the management domain as well as the workload domains. So there's a lot of flexibility there, and we're really sort of excited to finally be able to offer this for many of our customers.
And talking about some of those sophisticated use cases and customers, one of the things that, of course, those customers will have are very particular I/O patterns. And one of those particular I/O patterns that I know, I shouldn't say struggle, but we were a bit more challenged with, is probably write intensive I/Os. And we made some changes to the data path. So I know this is going to get a bit more geeky than the previous topics. So, you know, please dive deep, Pete.
Yeah, sure. Well, first we need to start out with that general thought that writes are hard. Writes are difficult for storage systems. And to be able to write data in a resilient way, in a fast way, that's really difficult. And so everything that we have geared in vSAN ESA is focused on writing this data in a really fast but highly resilient way. So as you might recall, in vSAN 8 update 1, we introduced a new adaptive write path, and that sort of allowed vSAN to write data in one of two ways. It allowed us to, most importantly, maybe perhaps process some of these larger IOs in a different way than smaller IOs, simply because the nature of those really large IOs can put on different pressures or different burdens on that storage system. And as a result, that really helped the efficiency of vSAN ESA. We were able to make, I think it was between 25 and 30% performance improvement just as a result of that. Now, both of the data paths that we use in vSAN ESA use an allocation of memory for the purpose of like coalescing some of those IOs, building up the respective metadata for the persistence of that given IO before it commits the full stripe write. Well, what we noticed is that once we had this adaptive write path in place, we could process those IOs much more quickly, which meant that we could write these fully aligned full stripe writes much more quickly. In the previous versions of vSAN, we had these what are called stripe buffers or banks. And these are sort of these allocations on a per object basis. But each object only had two banks, meaning that there was an active bank and then there was an inactive bank that was being used for writing that full stripe write. Well, as we were processing those IOs much faster, we would eventually introduce some contention at that point, meaning that if we had more banks, we could flush more fully aligned full stripe writes, but do it in an ordered way. And so that's what we've done here in vSAN 8 update 2. We have a dynamic allocation of memory banks per object, and it's going to adjust on an as-needed basis. And this essentially at the end of the day is all about increasing throughput, increasing IOPS, and lowering latency. And that's what this feature really does for many of our customers. They're not going to need to do anything. This is all under the hood, all automatic, and they don't even need to think about it.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I really like about the AEC architecture. It's really kind of like a pluggable architecture, something similar to what we've done, you know, to the whole regular storage stack that we have available in ESXi. And one of the other things that I saw in terms of improvements was around parallelism. It's something that we've also done for vSphere a long, long time ago by kind of, you know, creating these separate threads. But we've now done something for vSAN as well. So maybe you can explain how that works.
Yeah, so we this was a sort of a result of chasing the bottleneck for us. We make one aspect of the stack faster, and then we realize, oh, okay, now there's another opportunity to improve the stack in another location. In vSAN 8 Update 1, we introduced the ability to increase some of the parallelism on the threading that occurs at the DOM owner layer. That's sort of the primary location of control for that object. And so we introduced this idea of some helper threads that we would be able to offload some of the processes that are responsible for the DOM owner. And that worked out great. The challenge or the result of that was, though, that once we freed that up, then we noticed that the bottleneck was a little higher in the stack at the DOM client. And this is actually what we wanted, so to speak, because we, one, it showcases how fast the lower layers in the stack are. And what we were able to do here is apply the same methods to the DOM client as we did the DOM owner, meaning that we introduced some helper threads that would allow us to offload some of those processes. And this is really important for the Express Storage architecture because the DOM client is actually responsible for many more things than it used to be in the original storage architecture. It's doing most of the time it's doing the compression, and most of the time it's doing the encryption. So there's a lot more activity there. And now that we have that more parallelized, that's going to essentially help the storage performance, especially on these sort of very intensive single VMDK workloads.
One more thing I want to bring up before we go to the big announcement that we have at the show is something that I probably normally wouldn't even talk about, but I know this one is important to customers, and that is the VM limit per host. We were quite limited in the past, so maybe you can reveal the new number, because I think some of our customers will be very excited about this one.
Yeah, so let's get right to it. The previous limit for vSAN was a maximum number of VMs per host was 200. Now in vSAN 8 Update 2, in the Express Storage architecture only, it is 500 VMs per host. That's a lot. So that's one and a half times more than what we were able to previously offer. And I know that I had previously spoke with a very large customer. They had a quite sophisticated CI/CD workflow for some of their development arrangements, and they were running in to this limit of 200 VMs, and they were very much interested in seeing that limit increase. And this is exactly what they were looking for. Now, some might ask, though, they think, well, but do I really want 500 VMs per host? And that's a fair question. You know, it's a legitimate concern. But in many ways, sometimes I feel like that it's a bit misunderstood as far as the concern itself, meaning that when we think about that many VMs per host, we think about that as sort of a boundary of failure or zone of failure. What we really need to do, though, is decouple that concern from the storage that host is actually offering, meaning that if you had 80 terabytes of data on a given host, whether that's served up by 15 VMs or 250 VMs, it's still that 80 terabytes of data. So the bigger consideration should be, do I want an area of impact of the VM instances and the failure that could occur as a result of that. Would I be able to absorb that? So if you had a VDI environment, for example, do I want, you know, X number of users impacted by any given failure? And that's really a question that is, I think, the more important question. And of course, we have things in vSphere that help accommodate that, you know, DRS, HA and mission control. And if anybody needs to read up a little bit more on that, I think I know of a good book that a few guys wrote on that. So,
yeah, that's a fair point. And I think you do mention a couple of very interesting use cases. I can see some of the VDI folks, you know, already wanting to start leveraging, you know, those capabilities, going up to 500 VMs. And I have some customers personally as well that, you know, we're hitting the 200 VM mark. I don't think they will go to 500 just yet, but, you know, 225, 230, 240, even an HA scenario, at least that allows them to power on those VMs. So I think that's, you know, I think that's fair. And I'm hoping that customers are excited about that change, because personally, I do think it's huge. Now, talking about big things and big announcements and cool things, we also introduce something brand new with 8.0 update 2, and that is VMware vSAN Max. Now, this is a brand new disaggregated vSAN offering. I'm not going to explain it, because that's why we invited you to the show. So maybe you can talk to us, you know, about what that is and how it actually differs from data store sharing or HCI mesh, as we used to call it back in the day, because I believe that name is going to disappear as well slowly. So talk to us, Pete.
Sure. Yeah. So here it is. So vSAN Max is essentially a VMware's new storage offering, and it's provides this really highly resilient, scalable storage system for vSphere clusters. And so in a way, you can might think about it similar to a storage array, but it is highly distributed, highly scalable, highly and incremental in that scalability. It's really all built off of vSAN Express storage architecture. So that's when we think about what it is, that's really what it is that is powering it. Now, the big distinction between this vSAN Max and previous disaggregation efforts is that vSAN Max is there for the purposes of providing storage resources only. So in the past, we could provide some data store sharing where you could have one vSAN cluster borrow or consume some of the storage resources from another vSAN cluster. And we still have that. In fact, that's built really quite nicely now into the various workflows that we've sort of updated for this release. But there's a third option in there now, known as vSAN Max. And this is going to allow you to be able to provision a storage-only cluster for the purposes of powering your various vSphere workloads. And one of the interesting things about this is that you can, when you think about, okay, well, I have this brand new storage solution, I'm really interested in seeing what it looks like. If you're an existing vSAN customer, you already sort of know what it looks like. The management plane is exactly the same. The interaction of storage policies is exactly the same. All of these things remind you that this is the storage system that you already know. And that's one of the reasons why I think we've heard from a lot of our customers who wanted the ability to say, yes, I like vSAN, I really like vSAN, but I also want to keep my compute resources and my storage resources fairly independent, because I'm not quite sure what I'm going to need from a scalability perspective.
Wow, that sounds really, really cool. So let's recap briefly so that I understand correctly, so that the listeners understand this correctly as well. So first of all, you mentioned storage-only platform. The first question, of course, that I have is, can I run any virtual machines on top of that? But before you answer the question, I have a couple of more things that I probably should be covering as well. Then, if I can or can't run any particular virtual machines on that platform, am I allowed to run any of the other data services that we have available? So things like iSCSI, stretch clustering, or maybe something like vSAN file services, which itself actually creates virtual machines before you can create file share. So maybe you can, you know, elaborate a bit on that, because I think it is fairly simple, but at the same time also complex for those who are just listening.
Yeah, no, it's a fair question, because I think one of the challenges is that, you know, in the past when we were offering up our disaggregation offering, we were sort of learning as we went. You know, we wanted to see what was really important for our customers and what sort of worked, what really didn't work. So for a vSAN Max cluster, it won't be allowed to run user guest VMs on there. That will sort of be enforced by EULA licensing and such. But there may be some system-related VMs that may instantiate themselves on that vSAN Max cluster. And that's fine, and that's exactly what it should be doing. From a standpoint of supportability and capabilities that a vSAN HCI cluster uses, that being one that sort of aggregates the compute and storage resources, vSAN Max cluster supports those very same things. So you mentioned there, for example, things like iSCSI services or SMB NFS file sharing. Those are fully supported on a vSAN Max storage cluster. You can also be able to build out a stretch cluster using vSAN Max. So now all of a sudden you have this storage solution that is supporting a site-level resilience, just like the way that you would have a vSAN HCI-based stretch cluster.
Now, one of the other things that I'm probably interested in understanding a bit more is, does it actually work the same from a scaling and sizing perspective? So do you still use these vSAN ready nodes? Are they similar or are they different for vSAN Max?
Yeah, we're going to have a specific a new ready node classification built specifically for vSAN Max. And think of this, it's going to be very similar in some of the hardware specifications to the AF8, which is sort of a high-performing ready node profile, but this is going to be geared with much more capacity. And we've done some internal testing, and we'll be qualifying these ready nodes for vSAN Max with as much as 360 terabytes per host. So when you think about that against, let's say, 24 hosts, with some really bad math in my head here, that's probably a little over 8.5 petabytes for a single storage cluster. So a lot of scalability there, but the ready nodes themselves are geared for 100%, storage IO, which is really what they will be responsible for. So stay tuned on that part. We'll have some more information about that ready node profile for vSAN Max. It's not showing up on any of the websites yet, but stay tuned on that one.
You just mentioned one of those numbers, 24 hosts per cluster. Is there a limit as well in terms of hosts within the cluster for vSAN Max? And is there a limit also in terms of hosts connecting to vSAN Max?
Yes, so the limit of 24 hosts for a vSAN Max cluster is really indicating the number of hosts that would be comprising that vSAN Max cluster. That's what we're really starting off as the high limit, so to speak, for vSAN Max. And we do this actually for a few different reasons. When we think about the disaggregated storage offering, even the older offerings in previous versions of vSAN, we always had a technical limit on the number of hosts that could participate and connect with a given data store. And that limit was comprised of the number of hosts in that server cluster, so to speak, the cluster that's serving up those storage resources, and the number of hosts that are in the client clusters, the clusters that need some of those storage resources. And that number was and still remains at 128 hosts per data store that they are connecting to. So with that, what we have really set that limit for is so that in that particular case, if you had a 24-host vSAN max cluster, that means that you could connect up to 104 additional hosts in your client clusters, in your vSphere clusters, for example, for the purpose of being able to take advantage of those resources. So that we feel is a nice starting point for being able to offer a lot of flexibility so that you can have a lot of compute resources, take advantage of the storage resources of vSAN Max. We'll have some more design guidance out on core.vmware.com that sort of will help the user guide them along in their efforts to build up a vSAN Max cluster. vSAN, as we know, is really flexible. As for a vSAN HCI based arrangement, we've done that for a number of different reasons. With a vSAN Max cluster, we'll want to be a little bit more prescriptive in how we roll this out. And that's why we'll be offering some guidance that will help our users along.
To be fair, a lot of the VMFS based solutions also have limits in terms of the number of hosts you can connect. And the same applies to NAS. So it's something that people tend to skip because we don't enforce them. There are limits in place for all of those solutions on top of that. Now, I do want to ask a question, and I'm already sure that I know what the answer is going to be, but I need to ask anyway. What about licensing?
Well, thanks for putting me on the spot. I'm going to try to wiggle out of this one as much as I can. To be as clear as I can, that first of all, the licensing information will be coming out very soon. And I'm actually not trying to be coy on any of this, but when you have a new offering like this, there's always a flurry of last minute changes and adjustments and actual verifications through a large organization like VMware. I mean, think about licensing. We have to get that approved through a lot of legal processes, for example, making sure that we comply with certain regulations. So it's not a quick effort, and we're not necessarily doing this on purpose. It's just the nature of how new products roll out. So I don't have any information on that, but it will certainly come out, you know, sometime soon, I would imagine.
Yeah, I had to ask, and I was pretty sure I knew what you were going to say anyway, but that's fine. Hey, the other thing that I probably think customers will find interesting and understanding is if there are any particular use cases you envision for vSAN Max.
Yeah, that when we think about use cases, there's certainly going to be a lot of them. But the way that I like to think of it is sort of three general scenarios that one will be able to really take advantage of vSAN Max. A lot of times we know that the design of a data center, for better or for worse, is geared around what some of the application licensing and costs are associated with it. So think about a large database application that may be licensed based off of physical sockets or cores, whatever the case may be. And a lot of times a cluster will be designed around those cost constraints and sort of catered to that. vSAN Max will allow you to have these much smaller compute clusters so that you can focus on maintaining and controlling some of those costs for those applications. Now, the second scenario that I would see is often goes to the area of being able to extend some of the life of servers that have a form factor that were never really geared for HCI in the first place. So that think about a blade enclosure. We know we have a lot of customers that are still using those, and they have some life still in them, and we want to really cater to that. They were never really geared for HCI, and sometimes they may have some limited networking as well. But because we are allowing 10 gig interconnects between the hosts in a client cluster, that being a vSphere cluster, and the vSAN Max cluster, that will really play well for a lot of these environments that may have some of those constraints. And lastly, we see this really as an opportunity for some of our customers to standardize a lot of their storage offerings inside of their organization. So they're used to vSAN, they have it running elsewhere, they have some hardware refreshes coming up. We want them to be able to consider this as their storage solution for offering external storage services for their various vSphere clusters. We recognize that not everything is a fit for HCI, but what isn't a fit for HCI can work really well in a highly distributed, scalable storage solution like vSAN Max.
Yeah, and also think about the machine learning use case where now customers can fit their servers with GPUs and then connect to a vSAN Max system and still use vSAN without going to an external array. So I think those use cases that you mentioned are really brilliant, and it's just great to see vSAN evolve over time, and especially the way we manage these new vSAN storage solutions, right? So let's keep on the topic of management. And I know there are a few enhancements being introduced around management of vSAN, of VMs, and I believe policies. So let's start with the policies first. And there is something called auto policy management. Maybe we can explain, or you can, sorry, not me, but you can explain it first, and then how we enhanced it.
Yeah, sure. So the vSAN auto policy management was a feature that we introduced in the previous version of vSAN, vSAN 8 update 1. And the goal of this was to be able to create a cluster-specific default storage policy that was geared for the type of cluster that it was. How many hosts were in that cluster? Was it a stretch cluster or was it a standard cluster? And then did it have a capacity management mechanisms enabled or disabled, known as host rebuild reserve? And what we did was we created this this capability that allowed for vSAN to automatically create a cluster-based default storage policy and set it for that cluster. Now, we wanted to initially deploy it in a really non-invasive way. So we rolled this out and had it available. It was in a disabled and is still initially disabled for this version as well. But when vSAN recognized that there was any changes in the cluster, for example, you added a few more hosts that maybe impacted what vSAN deemed as the most ideal, highly resilient storage policy. In the past, it would say, it would give you a health finding and say, here's what has changed and here's what your ideal settings should be. Now it's up to you to actually go make those changes. In vSAN 8 update 2, we've taken this a step further in which right within the health finding itself, we have a button that allows you to automatically remediate that and make that change. So we're still giving the control for the change to the administrator. So if they're hesitant on, you know, rolling this out in their environment, they can still have the confidence in knowing that nothing's going to change on their behalf. It's still up to them, but this auto remediate button will allow them to make that change really swiftly. And this is sort of an incremental improvement that we've made on this. And there's still a lot of really good things to come in with this specific feature, but you can kind of see where we're going with this.
So if I understand correctly, it automatically updates the policy for the new virtual machines that are coming in, but with auto remediate, you can automatically correct the existing virtual machines and have them aligned with the new policy of the cluster, correct?
Yeah, it's going to make the adjustments to the existing default storage policy for that cluster only. So at that point, it will then be set for any new VMs that are going to be provisioned. And then vSAN will be responsible for also making the reconfigurations or the adjustments to the existing VMs that are using the cluster-specific default storage policy.
Okay, that makes sense. So something that I've read, but I'm not sure whether I can whether I understand it, so maybe you can help me with this. We introduce a new capability when it comes to disclaiming, and that's called a desired state disclaim. Can you explain it?
Yeah, and you know, sort of funny story behind this, I had some level of confusion on the feature as well. So when it first came out, I wasn't quite sure what it was aiming at either. But so let me sort of sort through this and see if we can help the listeners really understand this. Now, in the past versions of vSAN, in the original storage architecture, we had an automatic disclaiming mechanism, but it was sort of it was difficult to really execute on because of the nature of our two-tier architecture, how it was built within that original storage architecture. It really didn't work all that well, and that's why we sort of removed it out of the original storage architecture and just relied on a manual claiming mechanism for that original storage architecture. Now, when the ESA came out, that being a single-tier architecture, and we sort of normalized to all of the storage devices that were in use, that we reintroduced this idea of the automatic disclaiming. And that's great and everything. But what it would do is, and what it currently does, is it will claim any storage device that is on the HCL. So meaning that if you have that enabled and you have a host that has 16 storage devices that are on the HCL, it's going to claim all of them for the use by vSAN. Now, there may be use cases, and we've certainly heard from some independent software vendors as well as some of the hardware manufacturers that they would want the ability to configure some sort of way to make sure that not necessarily all of the storage devices were claimed, even though they were eligible. So what we've done here is taken the desired state model that oftentimes you see in modern software applications. And we've used this approach for the disclaiming. So this is a third option that we will have now within vSAN ESA. And this gives us the ability for us to define a desired state for which storage devices, if they fall into a certain classification, whatever those descriptions are, those devices can be claimed by vSAN while others will not. And this is going to be especially helpful for things like VxRail hosts, as well as the cloud builder mechanism within VCF. Some of our hyperscalers also want this as well, because they may be using some unique hardware that is, you know, not necessarily fully identifiable on the HCL. So this is really gearing at a lot of those arrangements. It's going to be available only via API and CLI initially, but it's a great step forward in sort of helping some of these certain scenarios be able to normalize the configuration of the vSAN host.
Yeah, it makes sense that you're going to use it as an API first, because you're assigning it as a programmatical method anyways. So talking about other things, we know that we haven't covered everything, but because there are some smaller enhancements, primarily about security and monitoring and configuration, what would you like to share with us to wrap it up?
Yeah, well, I've probably rambled a little too long here for many of the listeners, but I'll try to be brief on some of these other features that may be smaller in one sense, but hey, they're equally important for a lot of our customers. One is that for any of our customers using vSAN stretched clusters, we have the ability to tag vSAN witness traffic in the UI. Now, that may not seem like a big deal to many, but it really is. Not everybody lives in the CLI or is used to using Power CLI, for example, to be able to automate this. So this is now available right within the UI, right next to the type of VM kernel traffic that is available. You'll see vSAN traffic, and then you'll see vSAN witness traffic. So that really makes that process much, much easier. Now, speaking of stretch clusters, we've also introduced support of our VM IO trip analyzer. This for stretch clusters. This tool is what we use to help diagnose where a potential bottleneck may be in the storage IO path. And it's really a great tool, but in the past, we could only use it within a standard vSAN cluster, a single site vSAN cluster. Now it's supporting of a stretch cluster, which is really interesting because a lot of times in a stretch cluster, people think that they know where the bottleneck is, that being the inter-site link, but oftentimes that's not where the bottleneck is. So this is going to help them a lot with that. And then finally, we have another monitoring tool that was sort of updated or enhanced to help with understanding really where some noisy neighbors might be for VMs. And in the past, we were able to be able to fully detect a really active VMs and figure out if they may be impacting some other VMs. But that was only basing it off of a single point in time. Now what we can do is we can select a given range and then overlap those VMs so that we can figure out, is there any real relationship between the two? Is there any correlation? And then go from there as far as ultimately figuring out what the root cause was. So a lot of interesting littler features within vSAN 8 update 2, some of those will certainly be really important.
Well, I said smaller enhancement, but I didn't mean that they were insignificant. I think they will make the life of vAdmins more easier, and I think that's a good thing. So you've been on the show 4 times, and that means you've already answered the unexplored territory question multiple times. So we thought about a different question for you this time. And because this show goes live during the VMware Explore event, we wanted to know what excites you most about the Explore event.
Yeah, when I think about what VMware Explore is now, and when I think about some of the announcements that come out at the conference, in a lot of ways, I still treat those announcements in the same way that I did when I was a customer many years ago. I'm looking for what's new and what's really innovative. And when I think about, this idea of innovation, it's not so much about, wow, here's a new solution that solves a certain problem, but rather, what is this really innovative new solution, and how could a customer really exploit this? What are some interesting ways that they can use that? That's where I see the interest in innovation really sort of show up. When I'm focused on the sort of that conference itself, that's sort of what I'm looking for on the side. Many times as we're ramping up to the conference itself, I'm so focused on the release of a given product, that being vSAN, that I may hear about some sort of a project or product that is being worked on, but I don't have a lot of information or time on it. So a lot of times I find myself reading the very same post that others are reading to help me really better understand what we're announcing. So I think in a lot of ways, ultimately, it's I'm a lot like, you know, a lot of the VMware customers as well.
Well, that's very recognizable for both of us, I think. So thanks, Pete, for your brilliant insights. Let's wrap this episode up, Duncan.
And that's it. We've reached the end of another episode of the Unexplored Territory podcast. If I have to summarize today's episode, then my key takeaway would be that vSAN 8.0 Update 2 has not only closed the gap for ESA when it comes to functionality, but also opens new use cases and opportunities with VMware vSAN Max. Again, thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and rate the podcast wherever possible. If you have any feedback, send us a message on Twitter on @unexploredpod. I would like to thank my co-host and, of course, our guest of the day, Pete Keeler, for a fantastic episode.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.